afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the 10th episode of Registered Ear Offenders. I am Sal Rodriguez, here joined by my co-host, Chris Z. How's it going today, Chris?
Gangnam Style.
Opa Gangnam Style. If you have not seen Gangnam Style, be sure you check it out. It's the hottest dance. Ellen is in love with it. She has people on her shows doing Gangnam Style. And why the hell did we open up the show talking about Gangnam Style?
Well, here's how you know it's blowing up, Styles. I've never seen the clip, but I know everything about it. Because everybody's talking about it.
Do you know the dance?
No, but I know there is a dance involved. I have a vague idea of what it's like because I saw you. I saw you doing it.
The dance is so easy, I believe even Chris Z could do it.
Oh my God. So it's easier than the robot.
It's easier than robot?
That's the only dance I've been able to master.
Can you do the Macarena?
No, there's a succession of movements involved that I can't follow. I just don't move that quickly. Physically.
Well, listen, anybody out there, check out Gangnam Style, G-A-N-G-N-A-M, Gangnam Style on YouTube. It's got probably 350 million views. It's a hot thing right now. You probably hear it. I was at a wedding last week and they played it. It's from Korea. And it was at a Korean wedding that they played Gangnam Style. So you had an actual group of Koreans doing the Gangnam Style dance on the dance floor, which was a treat for me to see, a treat for these American round eyes.
I love that when it comes to Asians are so distinctly different that you're now an American.
Exactly. I have to be standing next to a Korean with slanted eyes to be considered an American by our culture. Hey, listen, anybody that wants to call in, call us at 1-800-893-9562. We got a great show. We got a great guest on our show today. I'm real excited, even though on the way over here, Chris and I were almost killed. Oh, see, this is where we need law enforcement. On the way over here, Chris and I are carpooling, and a little bitch runs a red light. She ran the red light and almost plowed broadsided into Chris's door.
And you could tell what it was is there was a construction truck blocking her view of us. So she thought, I'm a hot little fucking, you know, club cunt. I'll just, you know, I'm all, the attention's on me. Everybody loves me. So I'll just run the light. And she clearly didn't see us. And somehow fucking Eagle Eye Sal saw this chick, even though she was coming from my side, the passenger side. I did not see her until he just abruptly hit his brakes.
And well, you see, because I grew up in the ghetto of Los Angeles, where Chris grew up in the suburbs of Florida. So basically, whenever I'm out in the city, I'm always looking around for shit happening. I'm always expecting to get jumped by a gang. Believe me, you can talk to anybody who knows me. When we do the show on Bad Advice on Saturdays and we come over here on the metro, I take a knife with me. Believe me, I'm ready to defend myself at any given moment out here on these streets.
Yeah, I can attest to that. That is not...
it's not like that, you guys.
That is not just a lip service. Sal is indeed well-armed, and as am I. And I finally found my ideal weapon.
What is that?
I showed you this, right? Boom!
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It's cleverly concealed. You wear it around the neck.
That is a concealed... Do not show that to our guest today. Yeah. Do not show that
to our guest, for those of you in listener land, is a law enforcement officer. However, he walks two worlds.
He walks amongst us.
Yeah, he's two different people. He's the light and the dark. So when he's not enforcing the law, he's doing stand-up comedy. This is quite a find for us, Sal.
He's a police officer, a sheriff to be exact, a LA deputy sheriff, and a comedian.
But a successful comedian, not a sheriff who's dabbled once or twice.
No, he's good. I've seen his act. He is a good comedian. I hope that he is as good of a sheriff as he is a comedian.
I'm sure. Yeah, the fellow law enforcement officers who depend on him for their lives, I'm sure, you know, they want the same thing.
What if he's like Seinfeld on stage, but Barney Fife in his uniform? You think I just hope that he's as good and as successful in two worlds, because me, I kind of flounder in many different worlds. I'm not successful in any of my worlds.
That's what.
But I hope that Cliff Yates, our guest today, is as successful with the uniform as he is on stage.
There's a good friend of mine, Matt Alliker, who has a joke that I just think is hilarious. He said, "My business card says actor, writer, and comedian. So I can show the world I've failed in three distinctly different areas."
Exactly. You know, we, as someone who's multi-talented, living in a world that rewards the specialists, that's where we are today. So listen, tell us about our show, Chris. We got Cliff Yates on. What else do we have on? It's our 10th episode. I'm very excited that we made it this far.
Well, we've brought something to the table, so we're not taking this lightly. For one thing, we've got sketchy characters. This is our third installment of sketchy characters. Man, I'm in love with this piece. I think it's unique. I don't think anybody else is doing this. They're kind of old-timey radio plays. And, so, you know, they're on 45s, and we bring them into the studio, and we play them for the...
Nick brought in his turntable and he's able to play the episode of Sketchy Characters. Yeah, Nick, what's up? Hey, people are watching us. So I found out people are watching us. So I want to say hello to the viewers out there.
Yeah, we're in that camera right there. They're watching everything we do.
Everything we do. So if Nick
here too, they could see me too.
We want to see your hands, Nick. I don't want you touching yourself. This is such a classy place. I don't know if you noticed, Chris, you got a bottle of whiskey laying behind you. That's how classy this place is.
That's how,
I'm a little disappointed in myself that there's a bottle of whiskey in the room and I didn't even notice. I might need to get my eyes checked.
Like I said, man, I'm always checking. I'm checking for danger at all times.
But not only danger, but fortuitous serendipity kind of just walking out. Hey, there's a bottle of whiskey.
Yeah. So we got Sketchy Characters. I'm very excited for our third installment of Sketchy Characters. What else we got?
Well, we got two stories. Now, here's, I think, an interesting thing. I think everybody at one point or another has fallen victim to, or at least been the target of some kind of flim-flam, some kind of scam.
Bait and switch.
Yeah, something along those lines. And I've had one happen to me, no shit, three or four times over the last 10 years, bi-coastal. Because remember, I moved here from Florida 8 years ago. This happened to me about twice in Florida, happened to me twice out here. And finally, this essay records my response the last time somebody approached me attempting to make me a sucker.
So are you saying that since you're often approached that you have just mark written on your forehead? Is that what's happening?
I do believe so. I do believe that's what it is. Look, I have Mr. Ed sized teeth. All right. And I smile a lot and I'm an easygoing guy. And that tells street people, oh, this guy's an ideal mark. At the very least, it tells street people, this guy wants to hear my sob story. You know what I mean? And then fortunately, after 36 years of this going on, you know, I've caught on now and I'm a lot more thick-skinned than I used to be.
See, this is where you're not playing your cards right, Chris, because you're a tall man and women love tall men. Let me tell you something. Don't smile. Shave your head. Be tall. Women will be blowing you every day.
No, you know, Sal and I have talked about this before and we've talked about addressing it on the show. The best asymmetrical power relationships vis-a-vis a female I've ever had have been the handful of times in my life I've acted like a jerk.
Yes.
It has always been the most productive, and it's been the only time in my life where women were the supplicants.
Yes. And can you define supplicants for our listeners?
Yeah. They were the ones coming to my doorstep. They were the ones apologizing. They were the ones working harder than they had worked before. When I was, you know, when I first met them and I was okay with everything, and they kind of, achieve this, oh, I'll just coast by. You know, I can get away with whatever I want. In fact, I've seen this pattern a lot in my relationships where girls will kind of call me out. You know, well, I didn't like that. You know, you said you were going to call last night. You didn't. But they'll do whatever they want because early on they notice how kind of easygoing I am. They mistake me for a sucker. They think that they're going to treat me like their boyfriend. They're going to hold me accountable as if I was their boyfriend, but they think they're going to do whatever the hell they want.
Yeah.
And they're always surprised when I just, you know, abruptly cut them off. I'm kind of like that. I'm somebody who maybe doesn't manage things well. It doesn't, you know, pull people aside and say, hey, you know, I'm noticing the beginnings of a problem. What I'll do instead is I'll wait 2-3 months and then I'll blow up.
They call that passive aggressive, I think.
I thought passive aggressive. Well, yeah, I suppose it's a facet of passive aggressiveness. Let me finish with the breakdown for today's show there. So then we've got Cliff Yates. We've briefly teased him and what he's going to bring to the table today. And of course, we have Sal's Weekly Rant.
And a special edition due to our current presidential debates.
Whoa, even now, I want to make this clear. This is Sal and I maintain integrity in this show. Full disclosure, I do not know what Sal's going to talk about. Whenever we do game shows, if Sal says that I don't know the answer to the questions, I don't know the answer to the questions. So this is going to be as big a surprise to me as it's going to be to our listenership.
We do maintain integrity. In fact, the only integrity that Chris and I have is Fridays between 1 and 2 Pacific Standard Time.
And hopefully there'll be time, Sal. Sometimes we run a little late, but we've also got another edition of Greatest Disappointments.
I hope we're able to get to that.
Yeah, really me too.
And maybe our guest Cliff Yates can chime in on what has been a greatest disappointment in his life.
Oh, I'm certain he has to have one. So I guess we'll just jump into Sketchy Characters now because we're already starting to fall behind. Nick, at your leisure.
Sketchy Characters.
And now, Sketchy Characters presents Mantervention.
honey, I'm home. I stopped at the
Hello,
store.
Hello, Brian.
Christ, you scared the heck out of me. What are you guys doing here?
We're here to stop you from destroying yourself.
Destroying myself? What is this, an intervention?
No, Brian, it's a mantervention.
Brian, since your wedding, you quit drinking, bought a minivan, and missed a UFC title fight to go antiquing. We don't even know you anymore.
Remember when those Teamsters caught us cheating at the card table? You threw the first punch. Now you dress like that.
What's wrong with the way I'm dressed?
You're wearing Kirkland, Brian.
Costco is where you buy Secret Santa gifts for co-workers you hate, not where a man buys his clothes.
Remember back in college when your coach sprung that drug screen on you? You were partying a lot, and my piss saved your scholarship. Now I can't call past 9?
Brian, your dream was to play for the Dodgers. What happened?
Life happened. I have a wife and kid.
Good. Admitting you have a problem is the first step.
My wife and child are not problems.
They're not? Then what's in the bag?
Nothing.
What's in the bag, Brian? Come on, Brian. Stop it.
Get him. Go.
You're being ridiculous. Come on. Stop it.
Go.
Hold his arms, Adam. Look at this. Coasters, Yankee candles, and an Us Weekly. We're too late.
Maybe not. Brian, do you recognize this?
That's my game ball.
We found it in the garage.
The garage?
Go ahead. Touch it.
Oh, God. It feels like the wrapping paper on a child's biggest birthday gift. It smells like...
Hope, Brian. It smells like hope.
No! Megan is my wife, and like it or not, I love her. Now I want you two the hell out of my house before I call the cops.
It's no use, Rick. We've lost him.
Rick, wait. Where is my wife?
She's with Gail and Jenna. They want their friend back, too.
If Megan's with them, where's our son? I said, where's our son?
He's perfectly safe. There's a fire station not far from here.
Yeah, that was Mantervention by Sketchy Characters, played off of a scratchy 45. Thank you, Nick, for that.
That's probably my favorite Sketchy Characters so far. So
you know what? I really enjoyed that. And even though it's so old, it was like from the 40s, I love how they were so ahead of their time in their references.
I would not have thought there was Us Weekly back then.
No, it was actually US Weekly. That's what it was.
Okay.
Yeah, US. And then now they just took out the periods. It's just Us Weekly.
But it started as US. I don't know who they were following. Doris Day.
Truman. Truman was in there.
Right. There's a picture there. Like, he's just like us. He goes for a jog in the morning.
Truman's just like us. He picks up a dog by the ears. Or was that Johnson? Remember one of the presidents picked up a dog by the ears and...
No, what kind of sadistic maniac?
This is when that was allowed. You were allowed to do that back
that
in the...
That makes Romney's dog on the top of the car story sound tame. I mean,
Romney had a dog on the top of his car?
Oh, come on. You haven't heard that story? It was like the first kind of really oddball, you know, gaffe that he did. Was he, you know, he's just talking, and I guess he thought it would humanize him to talk about when he was young and he took a vacation with his family, and he's like, you know, we didn't have any room for the dog in the car, so we just, you know, strapped him to the top of the station wagon. It's like,
wasn't that on National Lampoon's Vacation or something?
That was the dead grandma. Yeah, that's with, right. Chevy Chase. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, I really enjoy Sketchy Characters. That was number 3, the third installment, and we got more to come.
Many more to come.
And yeah. Listen, I want to give a shout out to a good friend of mine, Tim Turner. He's really a fan of that and actually specifically asked if we were going to be having Sketchy Characters. So thanks, Tim, for listening. And that was for you. That was dedicated to my friend, Tim.
Cool. And yeah, we do appreciate our fans out there because, you know, we started small. And we're
so huge now. But hey, we got fans. We got fans in Argentina and a fan in Pakistan. Can you believe that? I don't know if it's a man or a woman, but somebody in Pakistan is our fan.
We are growing so quickly. We just bypassed Europe. We like fuck the nearest Eastern world countries. We're just going straight to the other. Soon we'll be coming back around to Hawaii and back to California, just all the way around the world.
If anybody in Africa is listening to us, please go to our Facebook page and like Registered Ear Offenders on Facebook page. Hey, listen, if anybody wants to join in on the conversation, 1-800-893-9562. And Chris, you got something to share with us today as well.
I do. Once again, this has happened to me now about 3, possibly 4 times. So I decided to publicly address it and hopefully prevent this from happening again, and maybe save anybody who's young and naive the heartache of falling victim to this ridiculous scam here. Sometime in my teens, I read a book titled Scams, which detailed dozens of decade-old flim-flams. All right.
Yeah.
One was the speaker scam, which consists of procuring an old set of speakers, say from a flea market, placing them inside packaging from state-of-the-art speakers, then selling them to some sucker who thinks he's getting the deal of a lifetime. I was walking west on Sunset when I heard someone shout an informal greeting at an unspecified person. I turned to look. I was the greeting's intended target. The individual who'd issued said greeting hastily executed a U-turn to pull up alongside me. His facial hair was unkempt and his t-shirt tattered. He launched into a well-rehearsed sales pitch. "My man, I got these." His shifty eyes and hackneyed opener triggered the memory of the two previous times I'd found myself in the same situation. "Speakers," I cut him off, "and you've got to get rid of them before your boss notices that they're missing from the warehouse, right?" His passenger's face went white. The driver, however, had the intestinal fortitude of the gambler immortalized in Kenny Rogers' country music classic of the same name. Not only did he press on, he yes-anded me, a technique often used in improvisation, whereby one improviser accepts their partner's offer without question. Next thing I knew, we were riffing. I punched up his monologue. He was like, "Can I keep that?" We even fist bumped. Before we parted ways, he sheepishly advised me against walking alone in that neighborhood because you never know whose attention you're going to attract. I urged him to lose the windowless white van if he was serious about a career as a confidence man.
I like the windowless white van, which I think that they would have used later than when they approach young girls at the mall telling them that they're photographers.
You know what? We should actually open a service that rents white windowless vans to people who to ne'er-do-wells who have, you know, ill intentions.
And I would like to give a special thanks to Wes Hambright of Orange Dog Music for supplying the background music for Chris's, would that be, essay? Do we call that an essay? It sounds like we're in elementary school if we call that an essay.
It is an essay. That's why I wore my short pants suit, my Dennis the Menace short pants suit.
Chris is dressed like the guitarist in AC/DC.
Yeah, that's right. Angus Young, that was his name, with the beanie on top. And
that's right. I get this, you know, when I'm driving around, I get these guys, because I got a couple dents in my car, so I get the guys, "Hey, buddy, want me to fix your dent? Hey, buddy, hey. And then he's like, "Hey, $80, I fix it." I go, $80? The auto body shop quotes me $1,500. You'll fix it for $80. Yeah. I'm sure that's going to be a quality job.
Yeah, there is such thing as going too low, to where now it makes the consumer incredulous.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there like, you know, if you tell me, "Hey, man, I got these jeans are usually $150, but I'll sell them to you for $10. Okay, something is clearly wrong here, you know.
Well, it's like Big Five. You know, for those of you who are unaware, there's a sporting goods chain called Big Five here in California. I don't know where else they are. But they'll be like, "Oh, these Nikes are $20, normally $150. And you go, "No way. Way are those Nikes normally $150, and yet they're on sale for $20 today."
Yeah, I've seen sometimes, you ever see one of those really like Dollar General or something, there'll be like a bin with like undergarments, like $3 for $1. Like they have to be used. Like it just doesn't even make sense in this day and age that somebody's producing, you know, procuring material, paying labor, shipping these things, and somehow able to sell them $3 for $1. I just don't buy it.
I'm sorry, you say there's a place where I can buy used undergarments three for a dollar?
No, I'm saying I speculate that they're used. But by the way, if we ever get a chance to go to Japan, which I sincerely hope we do, you heard about the vending machines?
Not only did I hear about them, but I saw them when I was in Japan. I did a USO tour throughout Japan, and I did see these vending machines that sell used panties, apparently from the plaid skirt wearing schoolgirls. Chris has just fainted.
I gotta go. I'll be back in a few minutes.
The concept of used panties from plaid skirt wearing schoolgirls, it just drives Chris nuts.
I have a tote bag that I bring to the show with, you know, all my materials. I never thought I should include an extra pair of undergarments.
Chris just came in his pants right now. That's what he just did. Hey, listen, you want to go ahead and bring out our guest? What do you say?
Dude, we're right on time.
Yeah, let's
Holy
do it.
Shit.
Who do we got coming into our studio today, Chris?
We got Cliff Yates. This is the guy we were talking about before. Cliff spent the last 30 years as a police officer, originally an upstate New York cop, most recently patrolling the streets of Los Angeles as a deputy sheriff. One of his LA patrol assignments found him working a foot beat at Universal City Walk, and as fate would have it, a chance encounter with a local TV producer. Soon after, his double life as cop by day, comic by night was exposed on a local television news special. So that's Cliff. Let me see here. Let's just bring him in. We'll have him talk about the rest of life. Come on in, Cliff.
Cliff Yates, ladies and gentlemen. Woo! Ow! Or is it? Or should we say Deputy Cliff Yates? Is that how you're referred?
Well, you know. You don't, on duty, but I'm not on duty. I'm off duty now.
You don't know how much cleanup of the studio we had to do before you got here.
We had to hide all the weed. We had to hide the LSD.
What do they call it? Paraphernalia. There was paraphernalia everywhere. We should actually just label it a head shop and just we're a head shop.
We don't have none of that here.
No, we wouldn't have any paraphernalia here.
Nick's like, that is all in my pocket. Thank you very much.
Nah, man.
I saw a guy running out with a bunch of brownies. I know. I saw him downstairs.
So how you doing today, Cliff? Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
So what's going on with you? What's it like? I've had the pleasure of meeting Cliff before. He was a commentator on the same day I was a commentator recently on Bad Advice, a Saturday show hosted by Drew Marks. And, you know, you strike me as such a pleasant, affable, humorous individual, and yet you're a police officer, which completely destroys the image that we have of sheriffs and uniformed police. How are you able to be a nice guy and a cop?
It doesn't work. You know, it hit home. It hit home what Chris was saying, because I have the same, you know, because you show up with a smile, even if you're a cop, then people think you're a mark. Oh, this guy's easy. And then I'm like Chris, instead of being reasonable and, you know, holding people to task, I wait too long and then I just hit him in the fucking head. I lose it and I go crazy. And so, and you know, I never saw you like that. See, and I'm schizophrenic. Chris, I'm like that.
Let me say this, Sal. Now, for the most part, I'm pretty left of center in my politics. But one thing that does disgust me is the lack of support for law enforcement in our society. And I'm not pandering. You know me. I never do that.
No. In fact, I've never heard you say this before.
Recently, there was a story about the DEA agent. I'm sure you heard this. A woman attempted to run him over. He was forced. Apparently, there's no question that he was literally hanging on to the front of her hood for his life, ended up discharging his weapon, killing this woman. And some of the things that, you know, the reactions, I mean, her husband immediately called for this officer to be shot in return for shooting his wife. Like, nobody would concede the fact that this woman deserved to be shot. You know what I mean? In fact, I can scarcely think of a case where somebody deserved more to be shot than attempting to run over a DEA agent who was on foot with their vehicle. And I mean, just the lack of support is starting. And I genuinely believe that each community should have the option to sign away their access to the police. If you're so bothered by the police, you should have the right to say, you know what, we don't want police in our neighborhood anymore. And then you can take it and see what happens to your community.
I like it.
Cliff, have you ever shot somebody?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I shot somebody and the guy lived. He's okay. But it's funny because, you know, I some people react differently when they shoot people. They don't talk or they're quiet or, you know, they're upset. I was still smiling in the middle of the street, and other officers showed up, and I said, I just shot this guy. He was hitting people with the bumper jack, and they go, no, you didn't, because probably I had the smile on my face. It was kind of fun. And I said, yeah, I did. And the guy laying on the ground, yeah, he shot me, and I'm the victim. But, you know, it was in South Central, and it was in Linwood, and it was on Long Beach Boulevard in Josephine. There's a place called Tam's Number 9 right there. And I shot the guy in the number 2 lane right in front of the place. How bad a neighborhood. These people kept cooking their burgers. They were taking orders. Even a shooting did not stop them. It was nothing unusual.
Hey, listen, we got a clip of Cliff Yates performing. I think this is from Ventura Harbor Comedy Club, I believe. So, Nick, why don't we go ahead and play the clip of Cliff Yates?
My parents hated me, too. My baby bottle, inverted nipples. You ever suck and suck and nothing comes out? Why do you look at him when I say that? My dad never disciplined me. He never disciplined me. He sentenced me. As a baby, I thought I was on death row. My high chair broke in. Most kids got a spanking, I got the chair. This was better than the gas chamber. My dad would start on the pillowcase and stick my head in it. My dad taught me about being a cop, police procedure. but not about sex and birds and the bees. So when I started dating, I got confused. To me, foreplay was, you have the right to remain silent. Assume the position. Spread them. For 2 years, I picked up my dates. I opened the car door. I put them in the back seat. Watch ahead. Messed up my dating life. I used to date a girl from the Department of Motor Vehicles. I hated her. Before I could get into bed with her, I had to wait in line for 2 hours. Having sex with this girl was like taking my driver's test. She had a clipboard. Told me to make sure I was strapped in and look over my left shoulder. She said, don't look at me. Use your mirrors. She told me to use hand signals before I pulled out. What the hell?
That is Cliff Yates and our guest today, comedy cop Cliff Yates from the LA Sheriff's Department.
Thanks for having me. This is great. You guys put on a good show.
Very funny stuff. And you have an old school style, which I like. I don't think you've ever heard what I do, but I'm big on punchlines again, and I think that's a lost art.
Chris tells jokes, and he admires that you too tell jokes.
Yes. Because I think I grew up watching, watching Mike Douglas and all the greats, Rodney Dangerfield, and I don't know if you remember, there was a guy named Leonard Barr. He was Dean Martin's uncle. This guy was like 80 years old and he used to be on and do comedy like that. And so I just loved that. I started patterning myself after him.
So you were a comedian before you became a cop.
Yeah, actually. And I just started doing some charity shows back home. I didn't realize how I was doing this in high school in this small hick town in upstate New York. But this substitute teacher was telling a story when I was back there. She goes, you know, my first day in this class, I was so nervous, and somebody from the class came up and said, listen, we won't give you a hard time if at the end of the class you give Cliff Yates 10 minutes. I was already doing time in high school, and so it was kind of weird because there was no model for it. I didn't have comedy clubs, and so I actually started doing it when I was 15, 16 years old.
So as a cop and a comedian, doing time has double meaning.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you.
I'll be here all week.
Let me ask you this, Cliff. Like you said I didn't have comedy clubs accessible to me. I started out the same way in Orlando. We had one open mic 5 minutes a week, and it took me a long time to figure out, well, if you're serious about this, you know, you have to travel out. You kind of have to commit to it. This can't be a hop.
Yeah.
You know, if that's the case, what inspired you to actively pursue it? If your community wasn't conducive to it?
Well, I had two kind of parallel things. I was a cop in upstate New York also back there. And then people said, hey, and I always wanted to go to a large department. So I was applying in New York City. And then I was applying out here and people said, you should go to LA. You can pursue your other dream too. You can be a cop there and you can be a comedian. And so then when I came out here, I realized, I have to write my own material. So I started taking writing classes and then it went from there.
Tell us about your early years as a sheriff. From what I understand, in order to be a sheriff, you got to spend a couple of years in the LA County jails. Is that correct?
Oh, boy, yeah. That's no fun. It's like doing time. It is, really is. And so the sheriff's department, you have to start in the jails and then you put in for a patrol station. And then depending on how the movement is, it could be 1 year, 5 years. And so I put in for fast stations and I got out early. I went to Linwood down in Compton. So I got out within 3 years. But
what year were you working in the LA County jails? Because we might have run into each other before.
Actually, 1984, during the Olympics, when it was the men's central jail was the official jail of the 1984 Olympics.
Okay, you know what, though? The good news is that was ahead of my time. I did spend a couple days in LA County jail in my early 20s.
It's crazy, you know, and I was so stupid. I was from upstate New York. I didn't know these gang tattoos. You know, they have like, these guys have like, if they killed somebody or for every year they're in jail, they're teardrops. And here I am yelling at these guys. Are you crying? Are you crying? I'm a gang member, you know. What's your nickname? Crybaby? They were attacking me. They hated me.
They don't have the teardrops on the East Coast?
They didn't have that in my, no.
Did they have something equivalent?
No, I didn't, you know, it was so, I didn't have, it, my town had 4,000 people. It was terribly small.
Well, let me ask, when you talked about having to discharge your weapon, what's, because, you know, you hear a lot on TV about what happens afterward, but who knows how much of that is accurate.
Well, you're supposed to go to therapy.
Yes, they pull you off the street, correct?
You're required to go see a psych before they put you back on street duty, just to see if you're doing okay, if you have any nightmares and civil liability, and, you know, of course they care. And that's the procedure.
And your captain yells at you a lot. I know from what we've seen of cop shows, you always have a captain.
A black captain yelling at you.
Is that what happens?
Yeah, that's what happens. That's pretty accurate.
Now, you've never been in that position, Cliff, where you had to put your service revolver on your captain's desk along with your badge and rogue.
I have never done it, actually, no.
Have you ever wanted to?
It's funny because here I am. I'm coming out here to L.A., all these shootings and everything. My biggest internal affairs investigation was for a comedy routine, you know, under the sexual harassment law. They sent me. I was joking about my wife, who's Cuban, right? So my wife's Cuban. I love new cultures. We both sing the Cuban national anthem, row, row, row your inner tube. And then somebody put a thing in. Hey, that might be racial. He should be investigated.
Well, hold on a second. You were doing this at a private kind of like an actual show having nothing to do with your job, and somebody just happened to connect the dots?
It was actually a county function for county bosses, appreciation day or something. And the ombuds person for the county who takes complaints against public officers was in the audience. So the guy who hired me, he was afraid. Somebody said, if somebody complains, you're in trouble because you hired this guy. And so he says, I better put the complaint in myself. No one actually complained. And now I'm under investigation. I'm in a room with the tape recorders and the lights on me. I think they just wanted to see my routine on duty. I suspect it because they were laughing.
Did they ask you to stand up when you...
Yeah.
They actually had a mic waiting for you on a stand.
We're going to put this light on you while you're doing it.
There was a stool with water. I figured something was up. So, but you know what? I got paid to do my routine on duty. So because to answer the questions, I had to do my routine. Did you make fun of your wife who's Cuban? Well, let me tell you what I said. Then I went into my routine.
So what is the difference? Okay, because you started out, this as New York cop. You were what, a state cop?
I was a deputy sheriff in upstate New York. Okay. And then I came out here, joined the sheriff's department. It's funny because I always start my routine when because they always introduce me. This is L.A.'s comedy cop. He's a real cop in L.A. And then everybody thinks I'm with the LAPD. And that pisses me off, so I straighten them out. I say, listen, I'm with the sheriff's department. We're different than LAPD. They wear blue. We wear tan and green. We shoot people in the front. And then it starts to
boom.
Boom. They don't like it. They
Cliff,
get pissed
off. How do you get along? Because you probably suffer from the same problem I have, is that there's no more drummers behind you anymore. That's a rim shot when
no,
you tell
yeah,
your jokes.
It's tough. But,
you bring your own keychain with a snare drum sound effect.
I didn't even want to tell people I was a cop, but my Judy Carter was one of my teachers, and she goes, "Hey, listen, you got a real life. You got to tell people. Not all comedians have that, so it's a unique niche." And I really was starting in the local clubs like Igby's and the Ice House right after the Rodney King thing. So I really want to go on stage now. How you doing? I'm a cop. You
know? Hey, you know how you guys like me? You're not going to like me in 2 seconds.
Yeah. But you know what? If you go on stage and you take control of that room and that audience, you know, they'll give you a chance. And then if you win them over, man, I've never had any trouble. I figure if I made it through that time period, I never have any problems.
Let me ask you about some of these logistics. What's the schedule like of a sheriff, like the work schedule, and how would that coincide or mesh with a comedy schedule?
Well, it's weird because I always proclaim, oh, I'm cop by day, comedian by night, but really I work nights. So I have to do it on my time off, or I have to take vacation time. And so if I get like a week gig, or I frequently open for Mike Marino, I'll have to get time off. I take vacation, you know. It's hard. I can't call in sick. And then I'm on Facebook. Hey, come see me here. You know, hi, everybody. I'm supposed to be on duty. Somebody's getting raped right now, but I got to do my comedy.
Good thing I got better because I just got offered a show in an hour.
Yeah.
So what exactly is the difference between a deputy sheriff or a county sheriff or, versus LAPD versus a state cop?
The difference, like LAPD, you know, they take care of the city of Los Angeles and they're just a police agency.
And they do a fine job.
They do a great job. In the sheriff department, every sheriff by law has to operate a county jail, even if they don't have a road patrol. So we actually have both. So we have to maintain the county jail, and then we have patrol in the county areas. That's what we have to patrol. And then cities who don't want their own police department or can't afford it, they contract with us.
Oh, like West Hollywood contracts with the sheriff's department.
Yeah. So you see a sheriff's car with a rainbow on its side, right. You know. I was so scared. I worked there for a while, and I was scared to be in a city where the city council was the village people. It was crazy. No, I had to go to the first meeting, and they were all there, the construction guy, the Indian guy. And I walked in, and they thought I was the cop. Start singing, no YMCA.
Let me ask you this thing, Cliff. Is it true that in the city of West Hollywood, the contracts with the sheriff's department, that if you see people smoking pot in West Hollywood, you're not supposed to bust them?
Yeah, they allow they allow the dispensaries. You know, the dispensaries are legal, of course, in California. And then it's against the federal law. So sometimes the feds come in, they want us to participate, and it's a big conflict because, as you see, you know, it's allowed.
Yeah, and we see on all these shows all the time, the sheriff's department or the police department is trying to have an investigation or do their job, and then the feds come in. Yeah, oh, the feds got this now.
Override them. Is that accurate? Do the feds inherently automatically always override local and law enforcement?
Well, there's sometimes a fight. You know, it's an argument. This marijuana thing is a big conflict because it's still federally not allowed, but the cities and the, like West Hollywood and L.A., they allow the dispensaries, and if you got your prescription, you know, it's... There's no enforcement of the federal law.
Well, let me say I'm all for this federal enforcement of the ban on marijuana sale.
And what? I would like Nick, my new co-host of Registered Ear Offenders, Nick Chacon, right here, ladies and gentlemen.
The reason being that we have too many jobs and too much tax revenue coming in, and the last thing we need is people being gainfully employed. And let's be honest, if you're working the counter at a medical marijuana clinic, you probably aren't the type to work white collar. You know what I mean? That, like, that's the job. You're there because you belong there.
You're saying, like, you might not even, if you're not working at the dispensary, you might not work at Starbucks either.
No, your Starbucks, yeah, I'll give you Starbucks. I'm just saying anything above that. You know what I mean? Above that pay grade. I'm obviously making a joke, but the point is that it's insane.
No, I definitely agree.
That in this day and age, in this economy, somebody would be focusing on something that is employs people, brings in tax revenue, is the antithesis of all the problems we have, the answer to all the problems we have right now.
While I have you, Cliff, I would like to, special surprise here. I received a parking violation. I received a parking violation at the Metro station for the subway, and it's from the Metro Protective Services, which I understand is a branch of the county sheriff's department. So I would like to see if you can have a look at this ticket and see if there's anything that you can do. See, that was a ticket for not paying my registration, for having an expired registration, but actually I just didn't have the sticker attached. How can I fight this, Cliff?
Listen, this is actually a new ticket. If you'll notice on the right-hand corner, the M, the Metro. Under law, these people are allowed. I actually worked Metro. I worked the Transit Services Bureau. Worked the subways at night. They're allowed to basically have their own administrative court. This is not even through a regular court. And so they collect these fines, and we have no control over this. You know, I could get a ticket, and I probably would have trouble. I wouldn't be able to get out of it.
So you're saying there's nothing you can do to help me with this ticket?
Nothing.
Ladies and gentlemen, Cliff Yates. Thank you for joining us.
I'm not sure that if you, I'm pretty sure, if you do nothing with this, I don't think anything happens, because it's not, you're not saying screw you to a regular court. You're saying screw you to the Metro.
So in other words, but I mean, if I don't pay that ticket and I get a warrant from the sheriff's department.
I don't think they have the power to give a warrant for this.
But hold on a second. Wouldn't they have the power though to keep records of that? The next time it happens, maybe have his car towed out of their lot?
Yes.
Okay. So in other words, as long as I never park at the Metro lot, I might be okay.
Yes.
But wouldn't it be any Metro lot? At least within the district of North Hollywood?
Anywhere within LA County, because they have a database that goes, actually within probably five counties, because they also have the MetroLink systems under there. So they have like a five county area.
I'm telling you, Sal, it's not worth it.
I just wanted to know. See, because actually, you know, I got the ticket. This is what they did. My registration expired the end of August. They gave me this ticket on September 1st. I mean, come on, have a heart. Give me a grace period of a few days at least. Who wrote this guy? This guy is Avila. He's a Latino. This is a Latino on Latino crime.
And he should have been able to discern that you're a Latino too by looking at your car with all its trinkets hanging from the rearview mirror.
He should have seen my Virgin Mary statue on the dashboard. He would have known.
The velour lining on the seats.
Actually, I have a new thing. You can only enforce the law with your own race to prevent complaints. So,
yeah, but inevitably somebody will come along and go,
I can't arrest anybody of a different race.
Inevitably somebody will come along and be like, no, he's El Salvadorian, I'm Mexican.
So I got 1/8 black blood in me. You can't touch me.
Let me ask this question. Something we've always wanted to know, of course, by watching television and movies, is that I commit a crime within the county of Los Angeles. I run from law enforcement or drive away. I cross the boundary. I cross the line into the other county. I turn around and go, la, 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 out of your jurisdiction. You guys got to go, damn. Is that true?
No. It's called the Hot Pursuit Act. Legally, I can chase you to Puerto Rico on the plane and everything. If you're in hot pursuit, there's nothing to stop you.
Movies have lied to us.
They have lied to you.
How do you handle this, Cliff? Let's say you start an investigation, right? You're investigating an individual, and for some reason, he decides to move his operation to Riverside, the Inland Empire, which is out of L.A. County, if I'm correct, all right?
Yeah.
So he lives here in L.A., but every day he gets in his car, him and his criminal cronies, and they go to their meth lab, let's say in Riverside. How do you deal with that situation where everyone is based in the county, and so technically it's your investigation, but their actual base of operations is outside of L.A. County?
They just cooperate with the other agencies, and they get together, and then they... There's a way of actually combining all of the crimes into one case that they file with the district attorney at a certain level. And so that's how they do it. And then there's task force to specifically handle multi-jurisdictional criminals who hop around and do all these crazy things all over the place.
Cliff, how do you guys mesh? How does the LAPD cooperate with the Sheriff's Department? Or are there like softball games, like, you know, LAPD versus Sheriff's Department? How do you guys get along?
You know, it's so weird, especially with me working the transit, because we have the contract for the red line, the gold line, the blue line. And if you notice, all those lines go through all throughout Los Angeles. And now we have the contract for the city buses. So the MTA said, well, we're going to have the sheriff. So sometimes there's arguments, like it could be at the corner down here, somebody gets shot. So LAPD and we'll be there together. Listen, was he on the bus when he shot, or did he shoot from the stop? Because if he shot from the street, that's yours. If it's on the bus, that's ours.
Yeah. What if the victim got shot and tumbled out of the bus?
Oh, shit. Now we're all screwed.
They had a situation like 2 weeks ago where Cedar Sinai, a guy jumped out of a window. He broke stuff, hit somebody. Then he ran and he jumped on a bus. And then we got the bus stopped, and LAPD goes, well, he's on a bus. It's yours.
And then he got off the bus. You threw it back to the LAPD.
You get back on a bus. You get back on a bus.
It became a who's on first sketch, you know?
It's kind of weird with the Metro because we're in the middle of L.A., so you'll see sheriff's cars driving around all the time. I'm always at 7th and Metro, or I'm right down around the corner at the different subway stops. But the subways are ours, and then up on the street level is LAPD's.
So even though you're from the East Coast, do you consider yourself a Los Angelian now?
No, I consider myself East Coaster just because of my attitude and everything else. If you'll notice, I can't really even talk this way when I'm talking to the public. I have to slow down. Automatically, I'm a smart ass. I'm speaking too fast. I didn't hear the guy, and then he hit me. So you know, I got to talk like West Coast.
Or speak Spanish. Do you know any Spanish?
Yeah,
your wife is Cuban.
She's Cuban, but I learned all the good stuff in the ghetto. I learned this at Tams number 9. Yo quiero hamburguesa con queso solamente nada más. Papas fritas y Coca-Cola grande. I can order a cheeseburger with nothing else on it, a Coke and fries. And also I can say, donde escopeta? Where's the shotgun? Always got to laugh in the ghetto. Always got to laugh.
How does Cliff Yates speak Spanish better than me, born in Los Angeles of Mexican descent? Hey, let me ask you, do you have any children? Do you have any half Puerto Rican children?
I have.
Or half Cuban, rather.
Half Cuban. My wife has 3 boys from another marriage. And so I convinced them. They're so great kids. I convinced them that when you're stepkids, I could kill you. I don't know.
Are they going to go into law enforcement or comedy?
One just came on to the sheriff's department. It's funny. His dad's LAPD. He came on the sheriff's department. And now the middle son, he's getting ready to come on, too. So
wait, your wife's ex-husband was an LAPD.
Sheriff. Yeah.
Wow.
And are there cop groupies? Is that
yeah. What do they call them? Badge bunnies? You see it on TV. Come on.
Is that what they got?
Yeah, they got them.
Well, you know what's funny? I have an audition periodically as an actor, and I put on a cop uniform, and I notice people seem to respect me more.
Yeah, sometimes.
Well, you know, I'm not trying to bust anybody, but I do notice, like, if I go into a store, people will kind of, they just treat me differently than when I'm dressed like this. I notice that.
Listen, this is how it is nowadays, because the criminals know you got rules and everything else. If you're at a gas station, let's say, and these gang members surround you, they're going to rob you, you pull out a gun, hey, fucker. At that point, you're a crazy bastard with a gun. As soon as you say, hey, I'm a cop, they're all over you. They know you got rules. Oh, yeah? What are you going to do? Fucking shoot me? You're in worse shape when you say you're a cop.
Do they ever say, drop the gun, fool? Drop the gun. Let's go toe-to-toe, Holmes.
That badge off, and also we'll see who's the real.
Take off the badge, fucker. Take it off,
they
Holmes.
They say it all the time. They say it all the time.
Cliff, thanks so much for joining us and sharing. I have 100 more questions I would love to ask you, but we're running a little
low
on
time. This has been great, guys. Thanks for having me.
No, you're welcome to stick around for the rest of the show here. We just got to take care of our one mainstay.
Well, we definitely, listen, you're still a part of the show. I want you to chime in after this. I'd love to hear your guys' opinion on this, because this is time for Sal's Weekly Rant. Who is our sponsor, Chris?
Our sponsor is Echoes Under Sunset, Jeff Ecker's Happy Hour. This is a fantastic little show I performed there last Tuesday. It's literally right under sunset in this little kind of storefront. You wouldn't even know there was anything there. A tiny little wine bar that opens up late at night. But a hell of a show, man. It feels like a Boston comedy club. Brick walls, low ceiling. I really had the time of my life. It's 1310 Glendale Boulevard, Los Angeles, California, 90026. Again, the bar is Echoes Under Sunset, and the show is Jeff Eckers Happy Hour, and that's every Tuesday night at 8 p.m.
Maybe Cliff can take us down there. He can throw us in the back seat and take us down to this Jeff
that
Eckers.
That could be a hell of a way to arrive at a destination in the back seat of a cop car. And
I've done it. I've done it before. I shouldn't say that, but I've done that.
You've gone to a comedy club with your cop car?
No, you know Marco Asante.
I've heard of him, yeah.
He Armand Asante, you know, he's a comedian, and he works on his shows. He was a driver on a movie with Steve Carell, and I didn't know, but he was also driving Keira Knightley. So he says, come down here to downtown. He goes, hey, we're going down to the set. Can we put Keira in the car and go down there? Yeah, put her in. I put the lights on. I drove right up to the set, got her out. It was great.
Keira Knightley. Well, she is so hot.
I got to hand it to you for driving her to this. I would have driven her to my home.
Exactly. And yeah, this is where the station is, North Hollywood, right here. Ladies and gentlemen, life is full of choices. Abortion advocates call themselves pro-choice, taken from the Freedom of Choice Act of 1964. As a kid, I enjoyed choose-your-own-adventure books, giving me the power to choose the fate of the characters. Jerry's Famous Deli, a restaurant in Los Angeles and Miami, has the largest menu I've ever seen. Their menu is a laminated 18-inch trifold with an endless assortment of foods. Their menu is way too fucking big, it's hard to decide, and can their chefs really be that good at everything? In his book, The Paradox of Choice, psychologist Barry Schwartz argues eliminating consumer choices can greatly reduce anxiety for shoppers. Its core idea is that we have too many choices, which leads to greater confusion. Assuming Dr. Schwartz's hypothesis is correct, we humans can't handle too much choice. Is this why every 4 years we only get two presidential candidates? We have the occasional Ross Perot or Ralph Nader, but in a nation of over 300 million people, you're telling me that only two men are fit to lead? Is that really much of a choice? In 2000, Ralph Nader, a presidential candidate on the ballot, was not allowed access to the debates. He was cock-blocked by the Commission on Presidential Debates, or CPD, an organization created by and run by Democrats and Republicans. The CPD effectively and successfully disallows any third-party candidate to receive airtime, leaving us with two candidates, a donkey and an elephant. The Academy Awards gives us 5 choices for Best Actor. Miss America gives us 53 choices. If we had several choices for president, would we just stand slack-jawed in the ballot booth as confused as me in front of a Jerry's Deli's menu? I want real choice. Two funded and sponsored men in a nation of over 300 million people is not choice. I've grown sick and tired of voting the lesser of two evils. Isn't it time we as a nation are allowed real choice, or would we not be able to handle it? That is Sal's weekly rant. I'd love to have you guys chime in. Chris and Cliff, what do you guys think about that?
Good point. I think you should have more choices. I'm with you.
All right.
Cliff agrees wholeheartedly. Yes. Apparently.
For once in my life, a law enforcement officer and I are on the same page.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a conditioning, and it really sucks. Somebody posted something on Facebook. It's a meme, and I know for the most part, Facebook memes are just dopey nonsense, but he made a good point. He said, what about all candidates work with the same amount of money? They're given a certain amount of time to discuss their platform during debates, and when they lie, they get buzzed. Literally, they get buzzed.
Or how about electrocuted?
Yeah, and I agree with that. People, I think, in this country believe that that's legitimate. Oh, well, of course we have two choices. You only believe that's legitimate because that's always what's been offered to you.
Yeah, we're spoon-fed. Just like we're spoon-fed the latest cute Disney pop star, we're spoon-fed the candidates. And we just sit back and go, oh, well, there it is. There's our choices.
If you followed, not so much in recent months, but I remember a long time ago when discussion of the oncoming elections, the upcoming elections first began, people were talking a lot more about Ron Paul and what he was doing, how well he was doing in the debates. But this guy has been delegitimized by the mainstream media. And yes. Don't mistake me for some Ron Paul advocate. I'm not going to go off on a rant here. I'm just saying that he has a legitimate track record, and he's the most consistent politician I have ever heard of.
Yeah. Hey, listen, that was the end of Sal's Weekly Rant. Thanks for chiming in, you guys. Listen, I want to get into our next segment, which we had to skip last week. And this is Greatest Disappointments. This is where Chris and I go back in our lives, and hopefully we have time to have Cliff involved in this. We want to know the time in your life when you had high expectations only to be completely disappointment. Disappointment? Disappointed. Greatest Disappointments. Chris, go ahead.
Big break, big bust, Sal. That's what I call this. I was 19 years old. I had just gotten into performing. Right, I got a job as an extra on a movie called Out of Sight with George Clooney and Jennifer Lopez. I was thrilled. then I was disappointed that all I was doing was basically walking up and down the same street in Miami all day long. Until a chance happening, a guy grabs me by the sleeve. Turns out to be an assistant director or something. And he says, listen, come here for a second. You're just going to walk in front of this phone booth. Every time we yell action, you just walk in front of this phone booth. I was like, all right, no big deal, right? Well, it turns out this is the scene, if you've seen the film, where, who's the short Mexican guy? Tremendously successful actor. He played Pechanga in Carlito's Way. He was on Oz. Hideous to look at.
Oh, Luis Guzman.
That's him, Luis Guzman, yeah. He calls George Clooney's girlfriend, but he calls her from a payphone. So that scene is what was filming, and I was literally crossing within inches of him every time they'd yell action. And I go, my God, I'm going to be in a movie. You're going to be able to see my face. I'm walking right in front of this guy. So I wait a few months for it to come out, right? I'm going to meet my best friend and his girlfriend at the movie theater downtown. My car breaks down on the way there in like the worst neighborhood in Fort Lauderdale. Months pass by. I've gone to college. I rent the film on VHS, pop it in, call my roommates into the room. I go, guys, I'm in this movie. You're going to see my face. Finally, it gets to my scene, right? Luis Guzman is all of 5'2". I'm about 6'1". So all you see is my stooped shoulders walking. It was so embarrassing. I literally called these, insisted that they run up to my room so that they could see this scene. And I still had the shirt to prove it. I opened my closet and I showed them, look, it's the same shirt. You can see the shirt that I'm wearing in that film.
And your girlfriend started actually putting her clothes back on.
Right, yeah. The girls that were there waiting to give it up to this movie star. So that was a big break, big bust right there.
Chris Z, greatest disappointments. Mine happened like this in junior high school, Sepulveda Junior High School, here in the San Fernando Valley, just a suburb of, north of Los Angeles. I used to play the violin, and it was the only thing that I really cared anything about in junior high school. So we had our winter concert coming up, and I put on my sweatshirt, as we would put on before the winter concerts. It was a white sweatshirt that I think Sepulveda Junior High Orchestra on it. I show up at the concert. Hello, Mrs. Gregory, I'm here for the concert. And she says, no, didn't you get the message or whatever it was? You can't be here. You can't be. I said, what do you mean I can't be here? She says, your grades are too low in your other classes, so you can't participate in the concert. And I'll tell you, that was a moment. There are many, I mean, believe me, I love this topic because and in that moment, I felt a piece of me die. And that is when my downward spiral in education started. But my heart was broken because just because my grades were low in the other class, I could not participate in the class that I really cared about.
If I was a filmmaker, you would see that scene would fade out, and the next scene you'd be in a prison cell.
Exactly. In the next scene, I would be in jail being whipped by Cliff Yates with his baton. That's what I would be doing. That was my greatest disappointments. Junior high school, Sepulveda Junior High. Cliff, what do you got? You got a greatest disappointments for us?
Yeah, and I would say if I was a filmmaker, I would do that and I would have Luis Guzman play you and Chris would walk behind you and it would be a hit. You know what? 1977, you correct me if I'm wrong, 76, 77, July, I'm Rochester, New York, 25 minutes from my little hometown. Elvis Presley's coming. I drive down to get tickets. The line's around the fucking block. And I go, son of a bitch, I'm not going to wait in this line. You know what? I'm going to come see him next year. A fucker dies in August that fucking year. Why didn't I fucking see him, you know? I did the same thing with Frank Sinatra. He dies. Now, at least I went and saw Don Rickles. So, you know, I made up for it.
You missed your one opportunity to see Elvis in concert.
Yes, I did.
And now here you are visiting us at Skid Row Studios with an empty whiskey bottle behind Chris.
Well, if the tabloids are to be believed, Cliff, then you can still see Elvis. You just got to roam the countryside, stop at 7-Elevens, look for fried, you know, just listen for somebody ordering, you know, fried chicken with, you know, banana sandwiches. I recognize that voice anywhere. Who's that guy in the corner? He probably weighs 300 pounds by now.
I think he's going to be reincarnated, I'm pretty sure.
Cliff, tell us where we can catch your act, or is there a website where our fans can visit?
Please, come to cliffyates.com. I got my own website. I'm on the Facebook. I produce a lot of my own shows. I open for Mike Marino around the country when I can. I'm getting ready to film a new DVD. This is a big show. It's going to be February 7th at the El Portal Theater on Lancashire.
Wow.
Yeah, 3-camera shoot. There goes all my money, life savings. So watch for that.
2 free passes for Chris and I.
Well, obviously, you already booked me, so I got to pay you back. So I appreciate you having me and let me promote my stuff. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Cliff, for joining us. Hey, listen, here's my idea. How about a show, Cops and Criminals? You have criminal comedians and cop comedians.
Actually, when I do the show with Mike Marino, it's called The Cop and the Con Show, and that's how we promote it.
Was Mike Marino a con?
Yeah, he is a con. He is a con, man. He's in East Coast, yeah.
How did you get mixed up with him? Mike is a comedy legend, and I strongly recommend if anybody gets a chance to see him that they do so. I mean, this guy's a veteran. You just get the sense listening to him. Oh, he could talk for 3 straight hours of just A material, you know?
Chris, where are you going to be? You're going to be doing some comedies coming up soon, right?
I'm going to be at the Capri tonight in Eagle Rock, California. Yes. So if you happen to be wandering through Eagle Rock looking for something to do, it's a free show. No, but I've heard good things about it. I've heard it's fun. It's my first time there. But so it's a local show.
Nice. And tomorrow evening, I will be at the Gene Autry Western Heritage Museum in Griffith Park in Los Angeles, California, across the street from the Los Angeles Zoo. We want to thank Nick Chacon, our sound engineer. We want to thank Wes Hambright, Orange Dog Music, for providing some music for us.
And Jeff Eckers, Comedy Under Sunset show.
Thank you.
Sponsoring Sal's Weekly Rant.
We do appreciate that. Chris, you have any parting words before we sign off?
Follow me on Twitter. You know me. You know I'm an old man, Sal, but I've finally given in. I've finally surrendered to Twitter. I know it's a way to get myself out there, so I'm trying to post stuff as regularly as possible. I'm ChrisZ34. Again, that's Chris, letter Z, 34 on Twitter.
I, too, have a Twitter, but I haven't even touched it in so long, so I forgot what my handle is. I think it's like S. Rodriguez Los Angeles or something like that. Next week, I will have my Twitter handle, and we'll start tweeting.
What is your little picture that accompanies your handle?
I think I took a picture of my penis or something.
Cliff, are you on Twitter?
At Comedy Cop. Yeah, I'm on Twitter. I'm on it.
You guys are tweeting. I am not tweeting. I need to get on the bandwagon. And listen, we want to thank everybody for listening to our show, Registered Ear Offenders, every Friday, 1 p.m. Pacific time. We want to thank our global listeners out there in Argentina and Pakistan. Thank you for listening to our show. I am Sal Rodriguez, our guest Cliff Yates here today. Chris Z, say goodbye.
Goodbye, guys. Thanks for listening.
Goodbye. Thank you.
See you next week.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We appreciate you staying tuned. And be sure to check us out on iTunes where you can download the show, put us into your phone, listen to us as you are driving. But remember, stay hands-free because Cliff Yates is watching you.
Or like us on Facebook.
or like the Registered Ear Offenders page on Facebook. All right, everybody. Have a great afternoon. Have a great weekend.